You're listening to Typed Radio. My name is Annelies de Vet. Now we're talking. Typed Radio.
Just my type.
You're listening to Typed Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Integrated Conference in Antwerp. It's October 22nd, 2009. And our guest is Annelies de Vet. Welcome.
Thank you.
The first question is, are you religious?
Well, I was raised religious. I was raised Catholic. But then my father was Protestant and my mother was Catholic, and my father became Catholic when they married each other. And so then I was raised Catholic, but then later on I realized that actually I was raised Protestant because it was the culture of my father, but it was all called Catholic and we went to the Catholic church. And then on a certain moment I stopped going to the church. And then on a certain moment I declared myself non-religious. And now, also after having a child, I think life is more complex than I can grasp. So it becomes more difficult to be clear in that.
But the two religions of your parents, did that in those days, I can imagine, it caused some problems.
Yeah, for my parents it caused problems, not for me.
Okay.
Do you have rituals?
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, it's difficult what a ritual is, because the moment I discover it, I might want to break it as well. I don't want to be forced into a ritual, but I do like to be conscious of the things that I do. So in that sense, you might could say that that I do have rituals.
For example?
I don't know if you can say that spending time on dinner, if that's a ritual or not, but I find it important to have good food, to sit together and to spend time on that. It's difficult. I don't have religious rituals, but maybe because things repeat themselves, you start to call them a ritual. But when you ask which rituals do I have, then I find it difficult to answer. But I do believe in ritual moments or be conscious of the things that you do.
For example, a project that you've repeated. I'll just say a subjective point of view, ... Is that considered a ritual then?
No, absolutely not, because maybe it is a series and maybe the concept is being repeated, but then the experience is so deep and so true that I would not consider it a ritual, although that might not be the opposite, but it's not a repetition. It's completely new when I do it.
How did you get to be a designer? Was that something that's always there?
Yeah, well, it was always there that I liked to draw, and then I wanted to become an interior architect, so that I would not have to design things, but I can only bring them together and put them in new contexts. But then I went to the open day of an art school, and I went to that department, and then in another department I saw posters and stamps, and I was like, oh, whoa, this is it. And then, so I started to study graphic design, and then, but actually later on, in probably years after being graduated, I actually really realized what graphic design was and what my position as a designer was as well. And also, when I graduated, I did a master course in the Sandbeck Institute, and I did design. I was also thinking, but maybe I'm an artist, but actually, what is art, and what is design, and what makes you a designer, what makes you an artist, and what position do I want to have? So then I moved to Australia for a while, and then I decided, okay, I'm going to introduce myself as an artist, and I'm going to check how it is to be an artist, because I'm there completely blanco. And then after a couple of months, I thought, no, I'm a designer.
And why?
Why? Yeah.
I needed problems. I couldn't cause the problems myself or take it out of myself, but I wanted to react on things. I wanted to be in a network of information, of people, of events, and I wanted to play a role in that. And I found it too isolated to be an artist and to tell a story just out of myself. I found that too difficult. I found it, yeah. I wanted to feel connected, also feel an urgence, and think about the audience and about the communicative value of it.
But you don't think that an artist is all, they don't feel responsible for that too? I mean, they are.
No, but it's more solely. I also think that the practice of a designer is changing, and I have many friends who are an artist. My partner is an artist, and also they work in assignments, and then there is also a problem, and also I get art assignments, making art in public space or on a certain location. But it is And it's how do you say it? It's mixing the boundaries. There's no clear boundary. But I do feel, if you look at the black and white differences, I think that a designer in general tries to find solutions, and then an artist tries to find problems. Or an artist more tries to pose questions, and a designer more is giving answers. But I do prefer to give questions, pose questions. But I, at the same time, I feel very connected to the métier of graphic design. So I'm also, yeah, might be in between. But I feel more comfortable being a designer.
But for example, your the projects that are, do you think they pose more questions, or they?
It's more
like
than what?
I'll go back to one of your projects. For example, the subjective point of view of
Palestine.
Palestine. Is that gives more questions, or you think you feel like okay, it gives me an answer, or
questions, definitely. Yeah. But it is. But I feel that I design it. I feel that I use the métier of graphic design, and I ask the people, like, what is the story that you want to tell, and how can I help you to get it as sharp as possible, to get it as well edited as possible. And then I get all the work and all the stories of all the people, and then I edit it and I put it in a book, and I think about the medium of a book, and what is a book, and what is the order of a book, and what is also the performance of a book. And so all these questions I find design related questions.
Mm-hmm. And because you also are working between Brussels and Amsterdam, mm-hmm. what are the differences then? Is there like teaching, for example, is there definitely a different mentality?
Yeah, I think it's a big difference, but I have to say that I know the Dutch situation much better than the Belgium situation. Yeah. So I cannot compare it precisely, but what I experience is that in the Netherlands, but also maybe a cultural difference between the Netherlands and Belgium, and which you can see also in the difference in a design approach, is that the Dutch are easily opinionated. And it's almost, first you have an opinion and then you start thinking. Well, and the Belgians in general do the opposite. If when they give an opinion, they hardly give an opinion, and they try to think or argument or talk around it. Sometimes, I think I like it when the Dutch can be sharp, or you have a vision, or you know where they stand, you know what they think, and that could be easy in communicating. And sometimes I find it very disrespectful and find it too direct and no notion of the other and no notion of the complexity of things. And I think also in find the Belgians sometimes way more respectful, more poetic, more sensible, and also more conscious of the fact that things are always bigger than you think they can be. And in design, I think this is also translated in design. And there, I think it really helps in Dutch, for the Dutch, to be opinionated. And not in design, the opinion is being translated into a design approach or a design language. And so that makes it more, makes it less direct, but makes it, gives direction to a design, direction to a meaning. And the Belgians are sometimes more poetic or more around it. And also the relationship between a designer and a client is very different. I think in the Netherlands, design in general is being accepted and is being taken very serious. So also when a designer says, no, I think we should do this and this and this, then the client takes the designer serious. Not always, of course, but in general, more serious probably than in Belgium. And in Belgium say, okay, you can say that to you as a designer, but I'd rather have pink, because that's, and then, so it's more difficult to put your idea forward, I think, in Belgium. And it's more all these relations, because that person is on that position, so you can't really immediately start questioning that, and so you have to do it through that person, and then you like this, and it's like, oh my god.
But how come is it that in Belgium, for example, they've really excelled in fashion design? How come there is that?
I think the lifestyle is more tasty, so people do appreciate also the food is much better in Belgium than in the Netherlands, and also fashion, and so manners between people, and fashion has a lot to do with that. It has a lot to do with how you present yourself or what you wear on which occasion. And I think in general there's is a bigger knowledge about that in Belgium than compared to the Netherlands.
And so what is your preference then, where to live then?
Yeah, both, or to be in between. Well, the thing is, I lived a while in Australia trying to be an artist. And what I liked a lot there was to have the position of an outsider, but still being in a Western society, so I can do my thing and I can, I can understand the manners, but also still be like constantly being surprised that things are different. Little things are constantly different. And that I like very much also living here in Brussels, that everything is constantly a bit different than I expect it to be, or I don't understand it, and that makes you very sharp, and it makes things poetic as well. And then in Amsterdam, I lived a long time, and I found it also almost a bit, not like, you know, like a prison is too strong, but it's, yeah, it feels a bit like there's a self-bevestigend, self-convincing, self-confirming attitude sometimes, and that I dislike very much. And also Amsterdam itself is so organized, everything has a purpose, there's not much noise anymore in the city itself. And in Brussels, I don't understand this city, I don't understand the system, I don't understand sometimes the people, and there's all these different languages, and there's this different, and what I like very much in Brussels is there's no majority, everyone is a minority, and always when you meet someone, you know, hey, this person might speak another language than I do. And is it all already by nature in Brussels, because it's a bilingual city, and then the EU community, and many Arabs are living there, many Portuguese, many Italians, and so it's such a mixture. And maybe, yeah, because I'm also a foreigner, I feel very comfortable in this city of many foreigners. Maybe that's different to someone who's born there or conceives it different, but for me, I find it I feel it as a big freedom.
So would you say it's a celebration of sort of anti-integration? Like, would you, is that?
No, it's not anti-integration, but it's, I have the feeling that there's, but yeah, it's difficult because also now I have still a Dutch newspaper. So I watch Belgian television, but at the same time, I don't exactly know what exactly is happening. And I think that really influences the way you perceive a city. And for that, I think Brussels is, yeah, it's paradise. And it's, I don't see crimes, I don't hear about crimes. I see really, really friendly people on the street. And on my street, I have a Moroccan shop on the corner, and his French is much better than my French. So he lives there much longer than I do. So he's way more Brussels than I am. And then immediately we had conversations, and he always says hi, and he knows my child, and also with other shops and other people. And it's something that never happened in the street where I lived for 8 years in Amsterdam. And that's, yeah, that makes me feel very happy in Brussels.
And how long do you think it takes till you...
till I'm one of them.
One of them.
No. Well, I'm always, yeah, I will stay Dutch. So I will always be a foreigner. But of course, I integrate more and more. Mm-hmm. But and also because of having a child who's going there to daycare, and in a half year he goes to school. So that makes me feel at home very much, because there's context. I mean, they're so kind of personal and to family life related context that, yeah, I don't feel a foreigner, but at the same time, I do. It's a bit in between. But that's nice.
That's, being a foreigner can also be like an added value to your life in Brussels.
Yeah, I think so. For me, it does. In this, and also, yeah, I'm traveling a lot back and forth with Amsterdam, so also I have the feeling that I, the krent uit de pap. I take the best of both parts.
Can you say you move for more regular design client-based work into design research and development, and also writing and doing your own projects?
Yes, absolutely.
Does that mean you were fed up with like working for clients?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, it bored me. Hmm. It also has to do with the fact that then there was this client that said, here's this content, and can you give a form to this content and bring it towards a book? And then I thought, well, I would do a different content, but it's not my position to think that. And then I thought, well, but what, yeah, this book, when a good book is just an...
But were you questioning the whole project they would present to you, for instance?
Sometimes, but also sometimes I think, well, design should not be too outspoken. It should be dienstbaar.
Service-minded.
So, yeah, service-minded. And so that might create a boring design. But I think then for the book itself or the purpose itself, it might be the best. Sometimes I get really... really irritated by all these stories of designers and all these forms of designers that stop me from reading the message. Or and so I felt, yeah, it felt difficult. And I want, so then I made something which might be good for the book and the content, but at the same time, it wasn't a very interesting design, but also felt that this wasn't the place for a very interesting design. Or, but yeah, and I couldn't get my... I didn't find the right positions or the biggest satisfaction out of it. And the moment I was able to create my own content or be involved in creating the content, not particularly that I would do it, but that I would be connected in this process, gave me so much more satisfaction and also so much more urge to make the content be as precise as possible in the final product instead of... of course, I want to make a beautiful design as well, but... I'm not so interested in the beauty of the design itself, but more in the function of the design.
But as an educator, what sort of message do you give to your student? Because when you say, for example, earlier on that we had a conversation with Armand, he said, you know, I really need that client. And that's part of being a graphic designer. But in this case, you say, I'm bored. What do you say to the student? Like,
Well, to the students, I want... what I question a lot is like, what is your approach or what is your vision towards the content? What do you think of the content? Is it something you can identify yourself with? Or is it, how would you place it? Or so I would stimulate the students to see things in a bigger context and not one content and then the most beautiful form or the most beautiful purpose, but also how does that stand in society? How does it relate to other things? And also that, because on the Sandbeck Institute, there's some people, they made beautiful designs and they will be, so I'm not against working for clients, not at all, absolutely not at all. But I do want to see things in a wider perspective and that you as a designer are conscious of your role and your position and what you do with the message and what will be done with the message afterwards when your work is done and when the design is in the world. And how do you relate to these things? And can you, if you relate to that, will you make other decisions? Will you do it differently? So that's, yeah, we talk about that a lot. And also, well, for instance, right now in the Sandbeck Institute, we have a big discussion also about populism, especially because populism is such a growing issue in the Netherlands at the moment. That, well, are we able to do something with it? Probably, we're not able to change it, but can you... Will you then just let it go? Will you just let society change and become a society you don't want to live in? Or can you also say, well, as a designer, we're part of this society, or as a citizen, you're part of the society, and with that also partly designing the society, and can you do something with this role? How do you relate to that?
And do you think graphic design can play a role in that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we had a discussion several times already.
Although it's a small role, but it is a role.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the statement would be, and it's put very black and white, so it doesn't really do justice to the whole thing. But basically, what you could say is, like, the design is superficial.
And how do you mean design is superficial?
It's...
Can I say I completely disagree with this point of view?
She does not agree. But it's also a little bit for argument's sake, but... I think still think it's the content is more valuable than eventually what it looks like. So basically, you can change the way it's perceived, a text, for instance, but you cannot change the you cannot change what it says. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's less valuable.
The design
is less valuable than an autonomous work like writing a piece or writing music or making a piece of art.
But you can also say, well, you can design it in that way that you cannot read it anymore. So there is a big influence in how the content is perceived or in what context you play it. And it's not, and this role of that design is not on itself, but it is part of all the different roles, part of all the different effects that finally create a meaning. And in that sense, I think there's the, you can destroy it, so you can also do the opposite. So there is a big space that design can do. Also, which image will you put big, which image will you put small, which will be a beautiful design. And also, I think when something becomes really, really beautiful, really, really good, it means that you have put your heart in it, or you have really given great attention to it. And I think if you can only put your heart into to things you believe in, or that you agree with the content, or that you agree with the other person, or and those are the moments that I think the quality can really arise.
It's also much nicer to do a design for something that's successful, or what is perceived as being, oh, that's really great. Mm-hmm. It's always nicer to make a poster for a play that's being criticized like really well in the papers than a play that's not been written about at all and nobody has ever seen. So that's
but
also...
But I think also, you can also turn it around, not always, of course, mm-hmm. but I think the moment you... The director believes in the play and he believes in it, so the actors, they become enthusiastic as well, and therefore you invite an artist and he's influenced by this enthusiasm, and then it's kind of it goes on top of each other and it creates success. And sometimes you feel like it's not then, and there was a conflict with the designer because he wanted to do something that the director didn't want, and then it fails. It's also a bit of how you feel it a bit already in the process. Not always, of course, but sometimes you feel, hey, there's something going on here, and then it comes out.
So do you think you're a good judge? Like if you walk down the street, you say, yeah, he had his heart on it, like that.
Yeah, no, I cannot be, I'm not wise enough, or not enough knowledge to be a judge on all the things. So it is, but I can be a judge for myself. I developed arguments or where I base quality on, and they, but probably they will shift as well, and those are, they're based on my ideas about quality in life and theater. And so in that sense I can sometimes recognize, think, hey, that looks like something I will like. But yeah, I don't know if that's so for a subjective judge I will be good.
The right to copy project I thought was really, really interesting. Can you explain what it is?
Well, it started out that I was invited for a conference in Montreal in 8 years ago, and then it was called Influenzone, so Zones of Influence. And there were all these hot shots of Dutch graphic design, and then I was the young one being invited there. And a similar counts for Canadian speakers. It was Dutch speaker, Canadian speaker, Dutch Canadian. And then I thought, of course, I said yes. I mean, that was a fantastic invitation to speak there. But then after that moment, I thought, but what am I going to tell? I just graduated and I have nothing. Yeah, I what is my story? I just, what I do is that I copy all the work of other people. And not conscious as well, but not per se as a design strategy, but more that I think, well, quality should be copied because we need to have more quality. So if someone made a great design, why not copy it? Why protect it so much? And especially what I discovered was that while designing, I often copied things of other people. And then I thought, oh, it's not it yet. So I changed something else and And then something unique came out. But I didn't want to, I didn't believe in being unique as a purpose. I find that a really silly thing because you're so influenced by so many things, so you cannot be unique. But I find it very stopping or remmend, breaking the energy down. If you think, I have to be original, I have to be original. And you often see that, especially with students, that they, oh no, this looks like something else, this looks like someone else. And then, so it's blocking the energy. And I think, well, just feel free, copy, do. And then, If you attach to it, and it's about the content and the situation and the context, there's something authentic, something unique coming out.
But are you also thinking outside of the copying as an academic exercise to see if you can do that?
Mm-hmm.
You see it also like in the practice of graphic design, you're really taking somebody else's work and as a starting point?
Well,
because I can see it in schools, I can see the value, but outside of like, really, you should not try to copy somebody.
Why?
I have no idea why.
In China, they think completely different about this.
But maybe, I don't know if that is the right way. It's more sampling. I mean, that's what happens in music a lot of the times.
Yeah,
where you,
completely normally music.
Yeah, and I think copying usually brings up a negative association.
No,
but when you say
thinking.
Sample,
yeah.
Then you have a different feeling to it, no?
But it's also that I believe that the design doesn't exist on itself. So if you copy something, you copy a part of a whole event. So you can never copy the whole event. You copy maybe the visual presentation, or you copy the momentum, or you copy a word. But you can, and so also you put it in a new context, in a new event, and the design exists within its context. And so therefore, I don't. If you just copy, it won't work. But so you have. I mean, you want the best out of it. And so you try to figure out the best combination of moment, text, design, color, paper, thickness, size, blah, blah, blah. And so that you cannot, it's impossible to copy that. So therefore, I think you should copy it because you should feel free in finding your way in it. And also because I think copyright, maybe the idea of copyright is that we protect the authors and the artists, but finally it's the big companies who own copyright, and the small artists they fail on it. And I think it's so much more interesting to think about open source, and that we live in an open source society, and that we build on knowledge all together. And if that's the set of mind, it's so much more. You can conceive all the products that are being made also as collective products, although it's directed by a person, an individual, but it's all collective. It's also the typeface is designed by someone else, the language is of someone else, and there's so many influences. So therefore also the atlases that I made, the subjective atlas of Palestine and the subjective atlas of Serbia, they were made without copyright in order to stimulate people to take it over and to spread these alternative images.
Do you think this whole, the subjective maps, mm-hmm. are they applicable to any region or country?
Maybe, but I wouldn't go to any region. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's particularly interesting in regions where who have a shifted representation outside their own borders, or it can, especially... countries or regions where there's a conflict of thinking about identity makes it more interesting to then there's a bigger it's a weapon almost in the stride, it's a tool for the discussion, it's alternative images to give another perspective, and that's especially useful in regions where talking about identity is a very difficult thing.
But for example, Europe, is that not the hardest one to?
Yeah, I made a subjective atlas of the EU from an Estonian point of view, and there it's a bit different because the EU has no image, and many people think, oh, I disagree with the EU, but at the same time it exists. They're writing laws. There's a big power. It what they decide will have a big influence on how we shape our future. So if you just think, oh, I'm against, then it will go on without the opinion of the people or the attachment to the people. So I think it is important to be at least interested, or at least seeing what is happening a bit. But when the EU has no image, when the only image of the EU is a black flag with yellow stars, or a series of politicians on meeting tables or graphs, then that's absolutely not an image you want to be attached to. And therefore I went to Estonia and asked to the Estonian students, can you map EU? And first they said, what a boring assignment, because come on, EU. But I said, no, it's not about what the EU thinks of the EU, but it's about what your experience is. And for instance, one guy said, oh, but actually, since the borders are open, I've been hitchhiking a lot. Can I map what I hitchhiked? And so that became a beautiful contribution. That one person, in which moment in time he hitchhiked, and what places he caught a hike, how many days. And so there's all these kind of images that tell how people perceive EU. And for me it was very interesting because the Netherlands was on the starting point of the EU, so I perceive it so different. And then Estonia said, well, first we were part of the USSR, then we were free for a short time, and now we're part of another union. I don't want a union. I want to have my own country and not to be connected to all these things. And so there was such a different relationship to thinking about this concept, and somehow you feel that a bit through all these images.
But do you find it a positive or negative, for example,
like what?
The
EU,
the idea like that we have a one currency, for example, is that you losing your identity or
no? I find it very positive, and not per se in the details, but I think it's very good to collaborate. And also now, for instance, I was in Serbia, and there, I mean, the discussion about nationality is so difficult, and also with the discussion of Kosovo wanting to be separate, and then Serbia wants to keep Kosovo, and then Bosnia was part and not, and then Vojvodina is a province. And I spoke with people there in Serbia, and well, they didn't see any solution in the near future, but then they said, well, but the moment we would become part of the EU, we could think differently about national borders, and we could, and then all of a sudden we can all be EU members but have these provinces, and they thought it would, being part of the EU will make this stride between these provinces, between all this identity, less sharp. I thought, hey, that's a beautiful way of thinking, and I hope, but it's difficult because I think from inside, from being part of the EU and also being able to have all the positive sides of the EU, it's very nice, but then being in Serbia and to experience how high the walls of the EU are and how much it's creating an inside EU and an outside EU, that I find very, very, very difficult. But I think the idea of collaboration and the idea of bringing all the countries together, that I find very positive.
And do you think it will have an effect on the design community, the European Union? And what will that effect be then?
Well, I don't know. I was 2 years ago, I was in the jury of the 50, the logo that was made for the 50 years of the EU, and the logo of together with all the different typefaces. And oh, this was such a bad experience, or it was such of a confronting experience to be in the jury, mm-hmm. and to realize how the EU is dealing with design. I mean, it's like, it's really, it's terrible. It's terrible. And this, yeah, it was a terrible experience in that side, a sense. And also right now there's a workshop in the Netherlands, and then the workshop is actually like designing a uniform identity for the EU. And I find a dangerous way of, dangerous, but I don't like to think about it like this way. For instance, a proposal for them is like, what about doing all the signages of all the highways in the EU with the same design? And I think, well, that's really losing local quality. That's really ignoring local identities. So therefore, I'm not for unified identities. And I think, well, but it's nice when there's a more design community, or for instance, integrated now, and there's so many different nationalities coming together, talking about design, showing each other's work. I think that's very important also for the development of design.
How would you like to be remembered?
By who?
That's up to you. I mean...
Well, it depends. For my son, I want to be a good mother. And for the students, I hope I help them finding their own direction, and to be remembered. It's a difficult question because it's so much thinking about your ego. You're putting your ego so central, and that I find difficult. But of course, I do want to be remembered. I don't know how. It's it depends so much on time and. Or a decade and zeitgeist, and that can shift its meaning. And so I hope that people will read, still value the books, or that the books are still valuable somehow, when they have still meaning in that decade of time as well.
Thank you.
More than welcome.
Type radio, type radio. Type radio, type radio.